Opening titles are always interesting. What do you do to open a movie? We had a whole montage of Babe Ruth planned to show what Roger was facing and what he was playing against, and then we decided the Yankee pinstripe right at the heart, right at Roger's heart, which is what Mark McGwire talks about at the end of the movie. In structuring the script, originally it was set at Roger's funeral in Fargo.
It's weird. In some ways, it's like the best season.
Working with Hank Steinberg and Ross Greenberg on the script, I said, you know, what touched us so much in 1998 was the home run race, was McGwire hugging the Maris kids. And I remembered that Pat Maris, Roger's widow, had had a heart problem and was sitting in a hospital, and I said to them, that's where this movie should start. It should start in the moment that brought us together with Roger Maris. When Roger's kids were hugged by Mark McGwire, we all cried and we didn't know why. We didn't know Roger Maris. We sort of knew what he went through, we thought. And for me, that was the beginning and the end.
I'm ready.
And in the middle was 61. So we brought the Marises to St. Louis, just like they did. In my mind, somehow the movie was about the loss of a husband and father. That lonely look that those kids had, that haunted look, all they had was the record. They didn't have him anymore. And now that was slipping away under the incredible season that Mark McGwire was having. So we cast actors who looked as much like the Maris kids as we could, and I actually met Pat Crowley, who plays the older version of Pat Maris, in a furniture store in Beverly Hills after I'd cast the younger Pat Maris, who I had met in a maternity ward in 1973.
Hi, Kev. What's that?
Bringing the bat to St. Louis was something that, the Hall of Fame sent, you know, we had seen McGwire holding the bat at the end of the press conference day, and so we brought it into the hospital so Pat could hold it and touch it and see it and feel and start the thought process that would bring us back to 1961. She doesn't say much in the movie, Pat Crowley, but she gives an extraordinary performance and she sort of pulls us all in. Major League Baseball was fantastic with us, getting all of this great footage, some of it on tape, some of it film, and then we'd shoot our Maris kids at the Coliseum in Los Angeles, and you get them there, and then intercutting, you know, Michael Jablow and I think, did a really kind of seamless job in placing those kids there. And then visualizing her all alone. In reality, as we found out later, Kevin Maris was with her watching this. And I couldn't imagine what was going through her mind. In my mind, the whole movie took place from the time the 60-second home run hits the bat, boom, until it goes into the stands. So cool. That center field, Yankee Stadium, 1961. We made the monuments. We made that wall. Watch this. God, my nipples are hard. That's Yankee Stadium, 1961. Chris Bauer's Bob Serve.
Oh, come on, Bob. It's opening day.
Finding everybody to be, you know, the guys that we remembered was difficult. I think that the finding the voice of Mel Allen and the essence of Phil Rizzuto, you know, we're not looking for imitations, we're looking for actors. And Chris McDonald and Joe Gafassi do a great job in the movies. Bruce McGill is Ralph Houck, Paul Borghese and Bobby Ozzea, Anthony Michael Hall, Dominic Lombardozzi, our Yankee infielders, Boyer throwing from the knees, Yogi fooling around. Yogi was the toughest guy to cast, as I said, as Cleet Boyer said to me, why don't you just go to the zoo? Tom Jane, playing Mickey, an extraordinary actor, sees this part. This guy knew nothing about Mickey.
Hey, Whitey, look at that.
until I showed him film and videotapes of interviews and told him about my personal relationship with Mickey. And Mickey was an interesting guy, and we know about his past that he let us in on and told us about his drinking and told us about his carousing, so it wouldn't have been right if I didn't include that in the movie. And it makes him a fascinating, interesting, rather tragic character at times. And the amazing thing about Tom is you never lose your likability for him. You never lose your good feelings for him. And some ways you forgive him because you know that it came from pain.
Maybe if he took better care of himself, he wouldn't be injured so much. Hey, you should be thanking me for leaving that out of the paper.
This may be my favorite shot in the movie. I wanted to capture the power of Mantle, the essence of this incredible guy. So we set up this Steadicam shot, taken from the dugout to batting practice, through writers, through Ellie Howard, through Yogi. But to capture him, to bring us this, to actually smell Yankee Stadium, you hear Bob Shepard doing the announcement. This scene, to me, was about power. It was about the first glimpse we have of Mickey. Envy, respect, the jealousy, all those complicated emotions. And I wanted it to be spectacular. And the look in this guy's face to show the sheer power. And I wanted Tom to hit the hell out of the ball like he does right now.
Big deal. Holy cow, she's one.
Paul Bergesi as Yogi Berra and Bobby Hosea as Ellie Howard. Give us a lot of humor in this opening scene.
What the hell does he eat?
Look at this.
He's unbelievable.
He certainly is.
I've been covering this guy 10 years. He still puts me on the edge of my seat.
Oh, look at this. Mr. Ambidextrial.
And most important, I wanted to show home runs off the bat into the stands, which I don't think has ever been shown in the history of a baseball movie. And there's one right there. The first time I went to Yankee Stadium in 1956, Mantle hit a home run like that. And I've never forgotten it. And that view of that is almost like an 8-year-old's view of what a, you know, I remember that home run to be like. Watching Barry Pepper be Roger Maris was an extraordinary experience. I mean, right there, as you're looking at him, Barry can run and catch and throw. And Roger was more than a home run hitter. He was a great outfielder. And we needed to show that.
Chipmunk running around looking for nuts.
Look, Maris comes over.
This whole opening day sequence is a long one. It was about 13 pages with a lot to tell.
Mantle wouldn't be pissed off that Maris doesn't have something to prove.
I don't speculate, Artie. I write what I know.
Look, you had to set up the sports writers. You had to set up the rivalry.
There's 15 papers in this town. We can't all write the same thing.
Roger also had a great home life, and we had to introduce that into the movie. I always got touched that that little girl that you see there was the same middle-aged girl that you saw in the limo at the opening of the movie. This is a Steadicam shot that started there and takes us all the way into the batter's box with Roger. This is the first time you see Mickey and Roger together in the movie. The lighting. Haskell and I, we would wait till the sun hit their shoulders and grace the top of their caps in a certain way that gave us that magical feeling that you only get in a stadium. Perfect costumes, period is right. Everyone's behavior on the field was very important to me. I mean, if you see Ralph in the corner of the frame giving an interview, Bruce McGill just said, well, what do I do? I said, you're just being interviewed. So he had the right body posture. In the research that we had, Ralph was wearing that jacket that day, so we have him in that jacket that day. The shot continues. We're still on a one shot, and it'll bring Roger all the way into the batter's box. Maris's power was different than Mantle's. Mantle's was majestic. Roger's were line drive shots like that. That's a like a hard line drive home run. I don't think in the history of baseball movies you've ever seen a home run leave the bat and go into the stands without a cut. What I wanted to do here was just show the innocence of this guy. Just show the politeness.
I don't know, Artie.
The honesty.
I don't think about that.
The almost self-deprecating thing, no, it'll be Mantle.
I don't think about that.
I wanted to just show a nice guy who was about to enter hell.
I'm ready for the game, Artie, so I'll talk to you later.
All right, I'll catch you later.
Yankee Stadium was always another character to me, and And in Tiger Stadium, gave us the essences that I needed. Like this shot here, we shot actually in the runway of the visitor's dugout in Tiger Stadium, which we made our home dugout. And just caught the afternoon light the right way. And used the actual stuff that was there. The lines of the bench behind Mickey's head and the grittiness of that wall that so many guys had leaned against and spit against. That ballpark has seen a lot of baseball, and I wanted it to look like another character in the movie.
And there's a responsibility that comes with that. You got to be the one.
Yankee Stadium doesn't exist like it did, but now it does. To start in that big wide shot and have Bob Shepard's voice, it's an awesome, awesome shot, that opening shot. And that was done with computer graphics, and these shots are all huge in its scope. That day we had about 3,000 extras. I mean, look at this. This is a big wide shot with the monuments in the back. I got a little humor out of the crowd booing him, and the relationship with Whitey and Mickey, and joking, and this is, you know, to me, just very accurate depiction of what an opening day ceremony is like. He was everything that is special about. And then what we wanted to do also is, you know, this is our villain, as close to villain as the movie has, is Ford Frick. Is to just have Roger getting the MVP, and all this guy's talking about is Babe Ruth. To present to you the, he also has an amazing set of eyebrows. Look at that. She will present the award. It's like two albino anchovies living on his forehead there. This is Claire Ruth. This is an actual live fur that she has. That's actually alive. These are big, big shots. I mean, we wanted to show, you know, what an awesome place this stadium was. That was our goal in the opening day sequence. On behalf of the Babe, I'm very proud to present. It took about, I think, 3 days to shoot this. Roger Maris. With all the pieces. And to, you know, also to set up the love story of Roger and Pat Maris. Have a wonderful season. 61 was shot in only 36 days, and in order to do that, we had to really know what we wanted. And I used image, like that image right there, Roger on deck, was taken from a photograph that was shot in Tiger Stadium. And look at that. I mean, that is an enormous look. And I wanted to make sure that we knew that we were playing in Yankee Stadium that held almost 70,000 people at that time. Hey, this is your fault. You guys make my, and by mixing in the organ and the change of innings kind of feel, it's as accurate as you can get. Boy, this is going to be some
cannoli of a season, I tell you. Come on, Sam. What are we talking about? It's one game. Score more runs than we did. So there is to it.
This locker room was built at East L.A. College. It was a women's locker room, and through, you know, amazing photographs and research, every locker is exactly the way it was.
Pap says Mickey's the leader of the team. You got a comment on that?
C.J. McGuire, the prop master, and Rusty Smith, the designer, and actually would blow up photographs and see what was on the top shelf of Roger's locker. So everything that was in Maris's locker right there was in Maris's locker back in 1961. That's the level of detail we try to have in the movie.
MVP, most vacant personality.
Daddy?
Yeah?
Are you going to live here with Bob?
Barry and I decided that, you know, there was a cold ball player. Why didn't they warm up to him on the field? And he couldn't have been that way off the field. And we really worked very hard together to find the warmth and smile that Maris had, that his kids described to us, off the field. This was shot at someone's apartment, actually, in Los Angeles. This is the first time that we see Pat and Roger together.
Why don't you get Uncle Bob to teach you how to juggle?
You know, the reality was, unless the women lived with their men in usually New Jersey, baseball wives went home and took care of the kids.
Just watching you.
Then they'd see them every 6-7 weeks. And that's just the way it was.
Oh, boy, I'm going to miss you.
It's only 6 weeks till you're home.
Yeah, 3 days. And I'm...
As a director here, you look for tone. You look for a comfortableness or an uncomfortableness in people and who they were. And Raj and Pat were high school sweethearts. They were sort of used to the routine, new to New York, had only been there 1 year. And Roger had mixed feelings. He didn't want to raise the family in New York. Pat had lost a baby the year before. So these kind of goodbyes I've been through many times when I'd go out on the road and so on. And to get the right tone, that last minute of being together, that last moment was my goal in the scene. And Haskell did a beautiful job of lighting it and just keeping it intimate. In that song, actually, the first few Mickey Who's is actually Mickey Mantle, and the others are Tom Jane. Tom is really hitting the hell out of these balls. Now, these scenes with Roger missing the ball and not hitting, he got off to a slow start. These were actually taken from miscues of Roger. Barry not hitting the ball, and I would tell him, listen, it's okay, I need this stuff. So those were actual misses from batting practice, and I just used them in the montage.
Not Yogi Berra.
This is a kid who never played baseball until we started. Tom wants me to tell you that he actually hit that ball in the upper deck. I love that shot because, to me, Mantle was the fourth monument.
Playing good ball right now. What can I tell you?
Well, you're 25 games into the season and your MVP's batting 200 with three homers.
This is also at East LA College. This is a Steadicam shot that takes us right into the locker room through everybody talking. I try to keep them as close to the camera as possible, like right there, and get us right into this interview with Mickey. When you only have a 36-day schedule for a 120-page script, you got to move fast. I did 20 takes of this shot till I got the one that I wanted, because with a Steadicam shot, it all lives in one. And just to keep it flowing, when you have a short schedule, you have to economize, and I never skimped on the takes. It was the setups that had to be crucial to making sure that you had enough time so the actors could give us what we needed.
Trade you? But what about last year? Doesn't that mean anything?
Mommy, can I have more juice?
No, the only thing that matters to them is if you're producing now.
Roger, everybody goes through a little slump from time to time. You know, they're not going to trade you.
Oh, honey, you know, you don't understand. This is New York. I mean, these rumors don't just come from nowhere.
Bob Gunton plays Dan Topping. This scene, in reality, took place in Dan's office on Fifth Avenue when he brought Maris in to tell him hit home runs.
Sit down, Raj.
We decided to play it in Detroit, keep the pressure on Roger, thinking he might be traded, and in those days, the owners never traveled with the team.
Not off the kind of start we'd all hoped for. We thought maybe
so we just kept the pressure on Roger here.
Aware of.
No problems, no.
How are things at home?
Well, how do you mean?
Well, I understand Pat's pregnant again. Everything all right with that?
I like this scene because he's talking about the fact that she lost a baby and she's away from him, but yet he says it's not affecting me. I always thought that was a really interesting clue to Roger's character. It's not the family. It's not, no, I'm not thinking about that. I'm just thinking about hitting the ball.
I'm paying you to hit home runs. Home runs and RBIs. You should be...
It sort of let me into a fact that it was a sort of closed, emotional man who had learned to become more emotional as the season went on.
Okay. Relax. Play ball.
Yes, sir.
Talk to you later, Ron. Stick around, will you, Roger?
Yeah.
I decided to shoot this very simply and keep it in two shots. Part of the reason was the time, but I also liked the environment. And I didn't want to overstate stuff and cover the movie with big close-ups of what's about to happen when Ralph switches the order.
What's going on?
I wanted to keep it simple. Not overshoot it. The only one who lives in a single is Ralph. I play this in a two-shot to see their uncomfortableness together.
The way you're swinging the bat lately, I figure he'll see some better pitches that way.
Ralph, you know, I really don't think...
You can see Tom being uncomfortable, but yet knowing that he's not going to get as many good pitches, yet he's being a team guy that Ralph asked him to be in the beginning.
Programs! Get your programs here! Get your programs! Oh, thank
you. This shot, that's a totally empty stadium. Even the guy leading off first base wasn't there. We shot him on a green screen in the parking lot in L.A. and reduced him and put him onto the field. But that's what you can do now. You can create these illusions of crowds and stadiums, and it's an amazing thing, and it really helped us sell the size of the movie.
Thanks. Go get him.
Man, the lasagna at that place, they gave me like 16 layers.
That's a good thought. Here it comes, Phil.
I wanted to keep the baseball real, and I wanted to keep it not a lot of slow motion shots and stuff like that, and just keep it, you know, different kind of angles than you've seen before. These shots I love because they feel very real and understated.
He's like my car on a cold day, I'll tell you.
Still got that car, huh, Phil? Well, here's Frank Lowry on the mound. He looks Richardson back, and here's the pitch.
All of the guys who played were ball players. They knew how to run. They knew how to stand. They knew what to do. This kid who played K-Line was a terrific player. Now, that sequence there was about 14 shots, but it goes by so fast. That's the thing with baseball. It takes a long time. Sometimes we'd use four cameras. Haskell would put one where I didn't even know he was putting it, and pretty much everything worked out real well in that it was simple. When you don't have a lot of time, you really have to plan well. Between Haskell and I and Scott Sakamoto, his right hand, we just stay ahead of it. That's all you can do, is just anticipate and stay ahead of it. Mantle was a movie star. This is a very interesting shot. This shot is on a ramp, so we're in slow motion now. And now without a cut, he will go into 24 frames a second, real time, starting right now, and he starts talking. It's a great illusion. I wanted Maris to look at him and see a movie star. And then cut back to Roger in that rather plain jacket with a crew cut, looking at New York's darling. And that's what that was about. And I thought of that shot while we were riding. I kept describing it until you saw it. Some people didn't understand it.
Put it on my tab, huh? No, Mickey, shit. You'll be getting them all. Let me get this one.
And it worked out well, and you can't do that without a great camera crew and camera assistants who knew how to time the movement of the film from the slow motion to the 24 frames a second.
Hey, I heard DiMaggio's throwing out the first ball.
It's a subtle thing, but the movie, in my mind, was shot from Roger Maris's point of view, and that really gets us into his head. Beautiful production design. This was a bar right near the Ambassador Hotel.
What?
Everything has size.
Something between Mickey and Joe?
Everything has a scope to it. You know, and this is Anthony Michael Hall and Chris Bauer telling the history of Mantle and DiMaggio. It would become a very important part of Mickey's personality.
Wouldn't say a word to Mick.
Not one word. That whole year, that wasn't right.
Mickey was never that way.
When I first came up, he was the first guy to take me out with the rest of the guys.
Spring training. Some of the stories were taken from things that Mantle had told me.
They wouldn't let me eat in the restaurant. So Mickey,
things that we had read.
Comes out to the bus.
And he has things that players had told us.
Of course, he finally.
And it all sounds like it's coming out of the right guys' mouths. You know, that was important. Was for everyone to sound right.
You won series against the Giants.
Yeah, I guess. What happened?
DiMaggio's in center. Mickey's.
Costumes by Dan Moore are perfect. You know, in the way Haskell would light it, This doesn't look modern. This looks like a nightclub in 1961. And Toots Shores and Danny's Hideaway were the two joints that these guys hung out in. And I think this is a very accurate portrayal of that time.
So Mickey's digging for the ball. He's got a beat on it. No sweat. All of a sudden, at the last minute, he hears DiMaggio. I got it. I got it. So Mickey pulls up and steps in.
This story about Mantle and DiMaggio, Mickey's rookie year, Mickey told me.
Here in the bullpen, Raj.
Yeah. So after the game.
You know, he once said to me, you know, when I blew my knee out, I was 19, 18 years old, and my knee was done then.
Turns out he's filled up with cancer.
Then they ended up at the same hospital.
And you think about a knee blown out at 19, and he still hit 536 home runs, and he played for 18 years in that kind of pain. Our goal in 61 was to show you another kind of pain, which was the demons that were driving him to be the self-destructive guy he was. This all is in one shot, this next sequence. And it's action. We're on a Steadicam. And we're following our guys in. I didn't want to have cuts. I just wanted this to be humorous a little bit. And I wanted this whole section to move. So we're still on the Steadicam. Now we follow him in. And we see Mantle with the attendant. And we're still in a one shot.
Hey, where are we going?
Well, we're going to take you home.
Right? Home?
Yeah.
I don't want to go home. Let's go to the Copeland. Now we got a game.
And now a hard cut to another Steadicam shot coming up. Which is here. So the whole thing had a flow. The goal of this was to get some momentum here and get Mickey into his room. This is done in the basement of the Ambassador Hotel, right in their kitchen. This is abandoned old suites in the Ambassador Hotel.
Really appreciate you helping us out here, sir. Really, I mean.
This once glory spot in L.A. that we repainted, furnished. To make it look like the St. Moritz where Mantle lived for part of the summer.
Daniel. Here's a little something for yourself. So you send him right up when he
Thank you, sir.
I mean, even here, the suit that Mantle's wearing.
How come every time you get drunk, it costs me money? Huh? Come on,
Whitey. The apartment, obviously. But look at what Roger's wearing. You know, the little jacket. He was wearing, actually, like, suede buck shoes. Very regular guy.
I got a big mouth.
And the other important part was the music. So we had that kind of jazzy bass line. Gave us a feel. Movement was my goal here to get us to this moment. All in one shot. Trying to keep Mantle in the foreground and then rack focus to Roger at the door. And then the ultimate thing was so Mickey could meet DiMaggio.
Here you go, kid.
We just played Mickey's face pale after heaving like that. And audiences just really laugh at it when they see him. But more importantly was to set up this relationship of Joe DiMaggio, who I think is beautifully played by Michael Nouri. And right now you know everything about these two guys. Not a lot being said between the two of them.
No, he's got a little touch of the flu.
This kind of stuff, like, right.
There's a lot of that going around.
DiMaggio knowing he's drinking, that look in his face that could spook Mickey. Now they have nothing to say to each other.
Throw out the ball. Just wanted to say hi.
Here.
Nice. Good to see you.
Good to see you, too. Take care of yourself, huh, Mick?
Yeah.
He's a lost kid, Mantle. And I remember all the times that you'd see Mantle beating the hell out of the bat rack. And that's what Tom got a chance to do. Except he really did, and he busted a knuckle on his hand in his shot.
I agree with Roger on this.
One thing I really learned in this movie was also how to let things breathe.
Yeah, I know.
Look, Raj.
And how important big wide shots are till you can cut in.
What's this, the Geneva Convention?
And this is another Steadicam shot that started on a bench, actually, up high. As he's coming in, it starts to move to the left. He actually stepped off. The shot originally continued to see. You can actually feel him stepping off. And I made the cut. But being wide gives you tremendous production values. And when you have stuff that looks as good as our stuff looked, to see it and feel it.
I mean, the guy's taped up like a mummy.
I learned a lot about patience.
Yeah. Oh, no. He's got to go out.
About letting stuff breathe in this movie.
That's what he's going to do. So let's not get riled up about nothing, all right?
I'm not riled up, Whitey. I'm just concerned.
You know, in getting the tone, the reality of the acting, I'm really proud of. Last night, and he has a bad game today, and these guys are so good. And just watching Roger's face now, the little things that Barry does in his eyes, the tone. The fact that there was beer in the clubhouse in those days. All of those things that, you know, I don't think you've seen in a baseball movie before. At one point, you know, there was concern, is Tom physically big enough? Is his back big enough? You know, because when I first met him, he only weighed about 165 pounds. Look at the size of this guy now.
Oh, nothing much.
So we decided, let's put the camera back a little bit on this master. And the way I lit him...
How you feeling?
You know, he's very fair. It makes him look bigger.
No,
watch this wide shot as we come back around. You'll see how much bigger he looks than Roger.
No, I just had a little headache today, that's all. What am I supposed to do?
These are things Mantle actually said to me.
Hotel. Say, Mickey, have a drink.
Have a drink, have a drink. It's a tough time not to have fun in.
No, I can imagine. You know how it is. Yeah.
Now here, look how big he looks. And part of that was his fair skin, and we lit him a little hotter there and sort of separated the room and kept Roger in earthier tones. He looks enormous there, and that was also part of the goal. And to find the humor in this between these two guys makes the audience love them. I think the really strong thing about doing the movie was to take us off the field. We sort of think we know what it's like on the field, but... Living off the field with Mantle and Maris that summer was something I wanted to do, and now we got the chance to do it.
Pretty comfortable. Now we like it. There's a Chinese place up here, laundry right next door.
I think the movie kicks into a different gear here.
Food anytime we need it. Perfect location, Mick. 15 from the city, half an hour from the stadium.
This is another sequence that really is about fun and fluidity. Just keeping it moving in here. The use of, come on, let me show you where it's at. The music all helps with this flow.
The stereo hi-fi there.
We got a maid comes in.
Just in staging it, you just want it to keep moving.
Yeah, and then kitchen's back in here.
So one flows into the other like that, and then the scene has a rhythm. And he's doing as much comedy as I've done in my life and my career. So much of it is about rhythm.
Yeah, me and Bob were sure.
When you can apply that to scenes like this, it gets to be a lot of fun to do. And these two guys, when served, that's a great little look that Chris does right there about the rent thing. He really meant it. And you get them feuding with each other, these little kids. I mean, Maris was 25. Mantle was 29. I think Maris was a young 25.
Mickey.
In here, you know, when we were writing, I said to Hank, I said, we'll get a lot of humor out of this. And we'll get this hard cut into the first evening together.
So, you know, it's not the St. Moritz.
Well, Mantle gives up the St. Moritz, and what does he get in return?
We'll have a good time. What do you think?
The most benign show in the history of television, The Andy Griffith Show, gave us a huge laugh. And I thought, well, let's have these guys whistle. These are two corny guys. And here's Mr. New York. He's a Mustang with his legs tied together.
Look, Paul, ain't it slick?
The scene actually went on further, with Bob doing imitations of Floyd the Barber and Andy. It just felt to me that economy was best and that the pan over and Mickey sour look told me everything.
No, there ain't no girls here. That's Roger. He's wearing a stupid little girly apron and cooking up some bacon. Rog, say hi to Merlin.
Howdy, Merlin.
Hey, oh, here's Bob. Say hi, Bob.
See, this is a very busy frame, three guys in it, a lot of activity, and it's one shot.
Now. All right, I gotta go. Breakfast's getting cold. All right, well, say hi to the boys.
I don't think even if I had the luxury of time, I would have done it any differently.
So how are your boys doing?
Oh, you know, they're good.
We just push in, and you get a slightly different size, and...
Bringing them up here?
And you got these two beefy guys in a waist-up shot.
You know, it's too hard when they're here. I mean, you want to go out after the game. They always want you to drive them all over the place. And it gets to be a thing. I mean, I miss them and all. It's just better for everybody in this one.
Yeah, and there you go, Mick.
This whole thing with the eggs was told to us by Bob Serve. When we were doing the research for the movie, he told us about Roger's eggs, and we got more stories about how we'd make them, and this is pretty much it.
I'm sorry, Roger, but I'm going to have to pass.
Mick, I'm telling you, don't listen to Bob.
What I love about this is there's three guys on their own.
They hit home runs.
If you've had roommates or been to college or live with somebody, it's the same kind of thing, except these guys were superstars.
Sorry, Bob.
The thing was to find that little petulance, that little edginess between these guys, and to get some humor out of it. Then came the big goal of the hot 2 months of Mantle and Maris, where they both went nuts. And I wanted to start off with a big laugh, which was Serve eating the eggs, which worked out great. But now we had to eat up 61 home runs, so a big chunk of them came in this sequence. I wanted the scrapbook that we saw in the beginning to be threaded through, so that and the use of black and white, just for a frame or two, keeps the press in mind. Mantle's power from both sides of the plate. All of those things to make this as stunning and visual as we could and keep it as real as we could was my goal here.
How come Maris never smiles? He's having the season of his life, the Yanks are winning, and he looks like a zombie out there.
Montages are always hard. Sometimes they're predictable, especially in a baseball movie where you have a season to tell. But when you have images like this, newspapers, high angles, intimate moments between these two guys, you know, it gets to be a lot of fun.
I think it's got a real nice ring to it.
Michael Jablow had found the Venture song from the first time we started cutting. He put the song in, and I just kept it. I loved it.
Well, Mick and I have been getting a lot of offers for endorsements, so we thought we'd form this partnership.
You think maybe you ought to cut Mrs. Ruthie on the deal?
Why? She hit a lot of home runs?
Cheers, Mick.
There it is! Comes a 34 for Roger Maris. How about that?
The Fenway Park wall was just a big high green wall that we put up. It didn't cost much money, and we built a scoreboard, and you put it far away and put a guy in a Red Sox uniform at third base, and you're in Fenway Park.
I don't know. Yeah, I guess.
Well, what if Hawk switches you?
Well, I don't know why you'd do that, Artie. You know,
we had a lot of ballparks to be in besides Yankee Stadium, and you find you can do it simply, and it makes the film have this largeness. Like this, I remember how many outfielders running back to the low wall in Yankee Stadium, or Maris running back to the low wall in Yankee Stadium and making a catch, and it's all due to the production design. This next scene when they're shooting this commercial, this was never intended to be what it was. This was all it was supposed to be, was up to, like, there. And instead I just kept it rolling, and the guys were goofy. And while we were shooting it, I just kept rolling.
Hey, Mickey, what are we
doing? You actually hear my voice, I cut in it. This was just actual footage that they just couldn't handle it, and I just cut it in.
How about that?
Mickey!
This is an actual appearance that Manuel Maris made on the Ed Sullivan Show, and if you peeled away Tom and Barry, you'd find Mickey and Roger, the real Mickey and Roger. That's the great stuff that you can do. It's like, you know, the things that I've done on the Oscars, I've put myself in some of the nominated films. It's simply an overlay, and it was a great illusion. It just, again, keeps us in the time period.
It wasn't a pressure. They didn't give him anything to hit because he was a Jew.
No, that's nonsense.
Oh, come on. Come on, Milt. They always cool off. You know what? I'm going to bet you $100. Neither one of them hits 50. And Maris will probably crap out at 45. You want to bet?
This scene I shot like a live television show. I'd have two cameras working. One of them a Steadicam, the other on sticks. This is the most respected record. And I pick pairs over shoulders, tight shots like this. We do the scene over and over again, and I would call it basically like a live television show. Take one, take two, back up, do it again, move over to the right, because it was a very long scene. And with not a lot of time, this was the best way, and it was really an exciting day to do it this way. Picking relationships, that's a three shot. And then over the guy with the cigar to Richard. And you pick quadrants almost and set it up that way. And I think it was like a 5.5-6 page scene, which we actually ended up doing in a couple of hours because of this way. And the actors loved it. And I loved it because it was a different way of directing a movie. It was actually calling it on the fly like a live TV show.
He had more home runs than every.
So why the asterisk? Why that squiggly little thing after the 61? There have been varying accounts as to what happened. The one that we went with was from a documentary that said that the writers called this meeting with Frick. So we interpreted it this way. Everyone had a favorite. Some guys wanted Mantle, some guys wanted Maris. Most everybody wanted Babe. Nobody wanted this record to be broken. That's the power this guy had, especially Ford Frick. Frick and the Babe were friends. Frick had been a ghostwriter for Ruth. So at this meeting is hatched the idea for separate records. Ruth's record would be 154 games. If someone broke it in more than 154 games, it would be a separate record. Unless Maris or Mantle did it in 154 games, it never would feel legit. And that's what Frick wanted.
Thank you for coming. I have a brief statement.
These shots, I just wanted scope, size, a lot of writers. And you do that by staying back wide. And it gives you tremendous production design. Donald Moffat, who plays Ford Frick, is a man you've seen in many movies, usually plays the edgy president, the edgy FBI guy, and here he was the edgy Ford Frick and does a great job.
According to my schedule, game 154 is September 20th in Baltimore.
Great prop work, vintage cameras. It tells the story. Bill Gallo was a cartoonist with the New York Daily News, but that approach was used in a lot of newspapers, and I wanted to make sure that that was in our papers. It was a really New York thing. Shooting this scene, you know, you'll listen up, you'll see at some point you'll hear a subway in the background. That's something that I mixed in, created sound.
I don't know, fellas. Say, Mickey breaks it in 154, and then I pass.
If you've ever been to Yankee Stadium, the subway ran around the outfield wall there.
Season to season.
Then you disagree with Frick's ruling.
Oh, he's the commissioner. It's not my place. I mean, we got 8 extra games. It's true, but...
And by putting a little organ music in, it just gives you that feeling. It looks like a, you know, hot August night in Yankee Stadium.
343 the year he set the record. You're only hitting 270. You feel bad about that?
No. Why should I feel bad when I'm doing the best I can?
And the song I used in the background is You Gotta Have Heart, which was from the musical Damn Yankees.
I'm gonna go hit.
Wait, here's the subway now.
Cut down, Artie!
Jeez, man, save your line. Look, fellas, all this is bullshit. And one of us has got 50 coming in the last month. I'm tough to us then.
Maris took a shot at the commissioner by saying that the base.
Now, this sequence coming up, I broke it down into three distinct moves. This section, shot in Detroit in the parking lot. And again, with a jazzy kind of feel to this section.
That's all anybody could ever talk about.
And then it ends in the clubhouse.
24 hours a day. We're chasing a ghost, bro.
It gives it a rhythm. I want you to feel what it's like to go into the stadium before a game and on their way to work. And it worked out really well. This is all one shot, Steadicam moving down that ramp backwards. Difficult move for the camera.
Well, screw it then. I'm just not going to do any more interviews.
You can't do that neither. Then they're really going to come after you. You got to give.
So when you combine all the elements,
what am I supposed to give them, Mick? I don't know.
You have in your mind as a director, how do I get them in? This whole sequence, starting with the parking lot, was written to be just in the clubhouse. It actually originally was written to be on a train. And I broke it down this way, and with great music by Mark Shaiman. You know, I've worked with so many times on City Slickers and Mr. Saturday Night and the Oscar medleys. He has a great feel, and there's a humor in that jazz, and it's a great feel to it, and it's a unusual piece of music for a period baseball movie like this.
You're right. Don't talk to him.
And we went all the way. This whole scene gave us a great joke at the end.
A real pitcher's duel here tonight.
All right, here's how you can realize how difficult it is to shoot baseball. Here's a bunt play. Let's count the number of shots. There's one. There's two with a pan. Here's three. Four. Five, six, seven, eight, nine, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22. Just for the bunt. So, you know, a lot of them were in the same setups, obviously, but still, when you're editing that and looking for a rhythm, how many shots will go into just a few seconds of baseball footage? And I'm really proud of the fact that we accomplished, like, that sequence there, as real as it is, and you have to have an actor actually bunt the pitch. So I'm really proud of the fact that we did that as economically as we did. Because of the time period that we had to shoot the sequence in.
That's what I'm doing. Have you seen the sporting news poll? No, Sam, I try not to read the paper.
And that's the thing, is you learn. Unfortunately, I've played enough baseball and know enough and been around it to know.
Why is that? I don't know. Maybe I'm not a New York.
If you broke that down, there also is acting in it. Maris has to be coy. He can't, you know, show them that he's going to bunt. The pitcher doesn't know he's going to bunt. They don't expect the guy to bunt, which is why he bunted. So you have to put all of that into it and, as a director, convey that to Barry, to the runners. And that's why I chose and insisted on all the guys be ball players, so they all understood how to make a moment work. The mood changes for Maris at this point in the movie, and as he gets edgier with the press and hits the fans get mad at him. This sequence again. That's where we shot Fenway Park, but now it's Griffith Park in Washington. It's great art design, a little bit of paint, and you're in another one of the ball fields of the American League. That's an actual duplication of the Life magazine that Mantle and Maris were on at the right month that they were on. And look at the set that the newscaster is on, the WPIX and 11. Minimal.
Until Frick's deadline, as the Yankees head to the West Coast to play the new Los Angeles Angels, and Roger Maris just 12 home runs away.
Hot damn. This sequence was also done at the Ambassador Hotel when Roger comes out to California. Coming to California was one of the reasons why there was an asterisk. The Angels were added that year, as were the Washington Senators. So with two new teams, that meant eight more games to play. Jenny does a great job here with a rather colicky baby, and watching my daughter with a little baby gave me, you know, a lot of ideas.
What's his name? Ruth.
Very fun. Oh, that's wonderful, Raj. Honey. That's really, really
Raj.
Great.
Hey, Raj.
Hey, Artie. Do you mind? I'm talking to my wife here.
These shots like these are very economical. I mean, I wanted the team bus, and I wanted to sell California, so with the right payphone and the right palm tree and a bus and a little sunlight, you're in L.A.
Here's the pitch. There it goes.
That voice is Jerry Coleman, who's now with the Padres. He played with the Yankees for, I believe, 9 years. When Jerry came in to do his voiceover, I showed him some of those shots that I showed you of the old Yankee Stadium earlier that are in the movie. And He actually had tears in his eyes looking at the old ballpark, which made me feel great.
What the hell is this now?
When someone like that who spent so much time on the field misses that place and suddenly you're seeing it again, it's a good feeling knowing that you're doing it right. There's a Steadicam shot from the cab.
Do you really think that you can break the record? Do you really think
that? I don't have
a... Hey, can he catch you?
Watch the...
Right into Roger's front door. This was the first day of shooting. It actually was the first shot of the making of 61. The pressure is getting to Maris now. People are at his house. People are all over. They're publishing his address in newspapers. And
how'd they get this address?
One of the papers. You know, they're playing in Kansas City, so he had 3 days to come home. And he doesn't even remember he has a new baby.
Oh, God, of course, Pat. I'm sorry. This reporter's... Hey.
Look at the Roger's hand on him, and you'll see this callus as he picks him up right there. That's all real stuff. That's from hours and hours of batting practice, but even just a little blister, a callus on the hand, is a reality for these guys.
He does look like the babe, doesn't he?
Haskell operated one of the cameras. We had two cameras going on the barbecue scene. That's Haskell's work there, and I just love this moment. This kid plays with Roger's hair. This sequence right there tells me everything I need to know about Roger Maris. From the uptight guy we see in New York to this guy wearing an apron and totally relaxed with his kids.
Beer, Mickey?
That's why I understand why Maris was never comfortable in New York.
Is he all right?
You know, it's been hard. The pressure and the New York and papers. But, he's having a hell of a season, that little son of a bitch. Pardon me.
This was our first day of shooting.
3 days, just...
We were told by the Maris family and Mickey's kids that how much they love country and western, so you get the right song and, you know, in post-production in your mind and the right look, and I put the motorboat back there, giving a little indication what this guy would do. It's a bass boat.
Daddy. Yeah?
I'm looking
at
the best baseball player in the world.
Who's that, honey?
This little girl who's so funny here is the twin sister of the little girl who was in the beginning of the movie. So we had twins play the same character. Barry was great with them, and they're not actors. They just answered an ad in the paper. They're terrific. The two of them gave us one great performance.
Who is it?
Thanks very much. I appreciate your help.
You bet.
This kidnap threat on the Maris baby actually happened. And to depict it was important for the family to let us do that in the movie. And they were very open about it and let us do that.
Well, the detective says 99% is just a prank.
You know, when you're dealing with people that you admire, and in my case, people that I knew, you know, Mantle, when you're entrusted with a life of somebody like that, or a chapter in someone's life, the responsibility is big. And I always had mixed feelings about showing Mantle in the way that I had to show him. But here, I wanted to have the awkwardness of men. Men not quite in touch with their feelings, have just experienced something very traumatic, and I was looking for little spaces in the acting behavior.
Making its way into the papers, you know.
Sure, and watch how they can't even say goodbye here properly.
Good night. Yeah. I'll see you at the park.
Yeah. Thanks for the day.
All right.
A haunting piece of music, Mark Shaman, 5-time Academy Award nominee here. This is, you know, a really moody sequence that I always loved, which was Maris gets all the kids in bed and protects them like some big dog, you know, don't mess with me. A On the counterpoint was Mantle alone in the hotel. He had just witnessed a beautiful family day and what celebrity can do to it. So he calls home. We decided to play the scene all in red with the occasional light switch on. And I think it added to the mood of the loneliness. And oddly enough, with all of the things in the movie about Mantle with other women and Mickey drunk, the scene that most affected the Mantle family was this sequence, because they felt his loneliness. And that's what the two boys told me, David and Danny. They just felt so bad for their dad. And I felt the strange position of feeling that this movie helped show them more about him. In this sequence in particular, they said they remembered so many times the late-night phone calls from their dad to their mom, and they'd hear her upset on the phone. And this depiction of him doing that was very moving to them.
Not when these hot dogs are so good. Good, they're a home run.
This happened in editing. I said, well, why don't we use the best take of the commercial and put it on TV, and that's what we did. I actually appear in that. My voiceover is available at Dave Chopwell. That's me. So I am in a movie.
Going to break Babe Ruth's home run record. Roger Maris comes into this crucial Labor Day weekend series against the second place Tigers.
We would shoot these little video pieces while we were shooting this. So, for instance, I remember when we shot this stuff, I'd run outside with a video camera and right down the street, we shot this kid and the other two people. And the one man is shot actually in the Ambassador Hotel, which we did right after we did that Steadicam shot earlier. So you learn how to incorporate and use sets, like that was right where we did that Steadicam shot. Because after all, and that guy behind him is chopping vegetables. The one who looks up, he's not doing anything weird.
I never heard of this guy Maris till last year. And I don't know, he leaves me flat.
And who are you rooting for?
I want Roger.
Hey, Roger, there you go.
Well, because everyone else is rooting for Mickey.
The year Ruth hit 60.
This was a very important sequence because Maris learns that the team wants Mickey. As for the M&M boys, I'm told there's only... I'm sure in his heart he knew that.
Are we feuding? Yeah, I guess so. It's on TV. Well,
and
fuck you then.
Yeah, yours. To a man, Yankee players are pulling.
But I think when you're in that kind of situation, you don't really want to hear it. I'm Gabe Pressman. When you work with actors like this, you don't have to tell them much about this moment. And keeping it in this wide shot just told me everything.
Hey, Bob, are you in?
This scene, to me, was about learning more about Bob Serve.
Is it true? They're saying on TV...
Chris Bauer, Mickey, tremendous talent. I wanted a guy who would be sort of like...
Don't ask me this.
Clint Walker was in Dirty Dozen. And that kind of guy, big, good-natured guy, which is what Serve was.
What are you, a reporter all of a sudden?
Nobody wants to be the bearer of bad news, so Bob tries to let his good friend down easily, but also telling him the truth and also being respectful of Mickey and respectful of Maris, and he's sort of caught in between the two. I love this scene. I love the simplicity of the acting.
We don't talk about it.
And also, just a quiet presence of Barry as Roger Maris.
I'm not saying they do because I don't know. But if they were...
In scenes like this, you really, you know, set up a good environment for them and keep the shot simple. Don't move it around. Just let the guys play. And with beautiful lighting by Haskell, we just did one little push in here at the end. Not to overstate. This was one of our bigger shots. I mean, we had horses, we had big buses. You know, as many extras as we could get outside in Detroit, that entrance at Yankee Stadium in the parking lot. This was a story that actually happened in 1962 in spring training that we felt was, all right, the X story is a great story, we could sure use it here. I know it's a little bit of a cheat, but all the things that happened to Maris happened.
What am I, fucking stupid?
I always felt a little bad that this was not perfectly timed to the movie, but I felt in my heart as a director, sometimes you have to make decisions, and I thought it was an ugly incident and something that sort of caught Maris in a real interesting way, of a guy with not a great sense of humor, but tried to be funny, and I just thought it was the appropriate moment to do it, so I went ahead and made that kind of a decision.
We're a game and a half up on the Tigers, the most important series of the year, and you want me to screw with it? What is this about, the home runs? What, are you reading the
But it looks like a small scene.
The fans pay your salary.
If you look at the shots in that scene, are very big.
You can change the lineup if you want.
And it couldn't have been done unless we painted those 55,000 seats at light green.
That guy is going to break that stupid record.
Number six.
We got the night game of that Labor Day weekend series was nothing. Al Kaline up, Jake Wood at first base. These are tremendous shots to get you onto the field. This next shot, the line drive, is a CGI shot. He actually hit that ball, but that's all created. The ball going out to right center. To get this tip play and have Mantle throw where I kept it wide, that's my voice going, hold up. And the throw in. It's a number of shots, but I think it's a real exciting shot. And giving you that big wide shot there of old Yankee Stadium 1961 breaks up that closeness that you need to shoot baseball in because you don't have a lot of extras. By the use of the CGI stuff, it gives us 72,000 fans in the old ballpark.
Ellie's batting 340. Whitey's going to win 20 games this season. Why don't you go talk to them? I'm not the only one on this team.
I got it.
Hey, Raj, one more thing. What's with your new autograph?
What the hell are you talking about, huh? Guy says, hey, Maris, put an X on this ball for my kid, would you? So I sign an X, and then the son of a bitch takes off.
The pressure's getting on Maris here. This sequence, which paid off the X thing,
this is the horse shit that they write about.
I wanted to get a lot of humor in.
Oh, I'm sorry, Mick. You know, you're not the only one with a bum knee.
I don't know what smells worse, man. Your foot or these eggs?
This horse shit. This we just found as we were going, and I just kept building on it. With the foot, with the egg. So we actually kept working on this as we were doing it to get this pace, to get this rhythm going.
This is cheap shot bullshit.
Hey, cheap shots, man. That's part of the deal. In 53, I tried to volunteer for the Army, but I got rejected on account of my knees. The papers started calling me a draft dodger. Don't matter to them what the truth is. I still get booed for that shit.
Well, so what do you do, man? You just get used to it?
No, but you got it.
And in the middle of Maris's tirade, we get a lot of information. But we also get a lot of laughs. I think this is one of the tighter sequences in the movie.
People to write about. Why are you reading this stuff, Roger? It's not helping you.
Here's more information about serve. I mean,
break this record or not, it ain't gonna mean nothing unless we get back to the World Series.
Here's a guy with a bad knee, and he tells them he wants that $8,000 if they make it to the World Series. These guys tip that now.
Now look what you've done. Probably make it.
This is a created shot of Yankee Stadium back in 1961 from vintage film. We just added to it and made it look like it did back then.
Oh, he's got it. That ball is deep to right field.
Again, art design, the low right field wall in the stadium. A guy who's a very credible K-line. There's dispute about was Maris booed after home runs, was he booed during home runs, was he booed when he came up to bat? Everyone had a different point of view. Cleet Boyer said yes, he was booed this way. Someone else said he was booed when his name was announced. I try to show some and mix it up. Rizzuto says, holy cow, there's a couple of huckleberries booing him. So it wasn't everybody, and I tried to do it as best I can, and some writers agree, some disagree, but as a dramatist, you have a story to tell. And a little bit of a lot of truths go into a moment. This moment was to show that the fans decided they wanted Mantle. Mickey was slipping away at this point in the home run race, and the fans wanted him to know it. I always felt that this was the summer that the fans finally fell in love with Mickey because they just didn't love Roger Maris. This is a haunting shot coming up. Big CGI shot our hero in the foreground, an old stadium in the background, right here.
He's never been the underdog before.
Now, this is really something, folks.
I don't think there's ever been a photograph of Mickey Mantle in that stadium the way that that shot was designed, and it was something that I thought about from the beginning. You put this guy in the middle of that ballpark and you build it up to this great moment. I just thought it was awesome. And here you think he's going to hit a home run, obviously, but no, he pulls a muscle in his forearm. Sort of the history of Mickey's career.
Oh, no. Mick, what is it?
Okay.
Come on, let me see.
And this injury had nothing to do with boozing and nothing to do with anything. It had to do with him just trying too hard.
Don't ask me twice.
God!
I said they should be eating something that's difficult to get on a fork, especially if he's eating with the wrong hand. So spaghetti felt like the obvious kind of choice. I don't know. I'm not good with it with my good hand, so. It gave us a, you know, this was the beginning. Boy, if he couldn't get spaghetti on the fork, how was this guy about to hit a baseball? This actually happened. The pulled forearm. The only thing different is the next day, Mantle hit two home runs. With our budget, we can only afford one.
I always knew it'd end up tying your shoes, man.
But that's coming up.
Just figured it'd be in a nursing home, you know?
Mantle played with pain. But he always put on that face, I'm ready to play.
Okay. Maybe you ought to sit this one out. I'll move Roger to center for a little
bit. Ralph. I'm playing. What are you looking at him for? It's my arm. I say I'm okay, I'm okay. I'm playing. Number seven.
When I go to heaven, I want... First, I want to go there, but I want Bob Shepard to introduce me.
I can't believe he's out there.
Should have seen him last night.
I know.
Any chance I could use the number 7 in the pinstripes, I did, because it told me everything about Mantle and how everybody remembered him. When you talk about Mantle, I go, oh, number 7.
There we go. There's the bitch.
And I try to keep it as visible without being as obvious.
Boy, it hurts me just to watch him, Mel.
This moment, the one-arm home run, where he actually hits... Again, he hit 2 that day. The temptation would have been, well, let him hit the ball actually with one arm. But that didn't happen.
Running sets.
Tom actually hits this pitch. And then I felt the pain was he just couldn't hold on to the bat anymore. And if you do it understated, then it becomes really powerful.
He's not going to get the heads out of here. He's a fucking god.
You can see Tom wincing there, and as he comes across the plate, Roger sticks out his hands, and Mantle says, can't do it, which means he can't even shake his hand. This part was about Maris seeing the guys loving Mantle, seeing him hugging him, laughing. They never did that when Maris crossed home plate with a home run. So the jealousy, the envy, the why not me? And then this part actually upset me to direct. Knowing Mickey as I did and being as close to his family was to show him with another woman like this. It was tough to do, but essential for the movie that someone could have so much success on the field and be so off base, off the field. And again, trying to sprinkle a little humor, these two guys, what are you doing up? You know, being caught by a parent. Actually, Mantle's caught by the goodness and straightness of Roger. This scene took a lot of planning. We talked and talked all day before we started to shoot the scene. It was exhausting for the two guys. And hard, because there's a lot of dialogue. A lot of, you know, yelling scenes can get a little over the top. And we wanted just to have some restraint, keep it real, and keep the tone real, and get out of the guy's way and shoot it, but yet keep the pressure on them.
You ought to go in early tomorrow, let Gus have a
look. And it's tough when you're shooting an interior scene like this. To make it feel real and not over the top.
Game's up on Detroit. You gotta take care of yourself.
All right, already. If I need a caretaker, I'll move in with my mother.
The guys wanted to move. They felt like they wanted to move, so we moved them from the dining room into the living room.
I know there's a lot of bullshit about this record.
And let it escalate.
I don't care about this stupid record, Mickey, and shove it up their ass for all I care.
Oh, come on, give me a break. Why can't you just admit you wanted to?
Oh, shit. Come on, Christ, have fun with it.
You sort of have to build these scenes, because you know you want to end up tight on these guys, more than likely, as they're yelling. So, you know, I'd play them waist up till it was time to really get in there.
Hey, man, I know it's been rough on you, all that stuff. But you ain't exactly helping it too much.
These two guys worked as hard at this scene as they did any of the baseball and any of the footage. They approach it the same way. These are really fantastic performances by these two guys, so I'll just shut up and let you watch.
Right, it's my problem. My problem! You just go out and do whatever the hell you want. Mickey, you ever just stop and think? If you took better care of yourself, you wouldn't be getting hurt all the time. Did you see what you did out there today with only one arm? And tonight you're out screwing around. I mean, how can you do that? You're Mickey Mantle, for Christ's sake. What's that supposed to mean?
Time for the close-up.
What the fuck's that supposed to mean?
I don't know. Maybe you're the one that doesn't want it.
You think you know something about me? You don't know shit about me.
Yeah? Fine. My dad died when he was 39. Hodgkin's. My grandfather, my uncle, same thing. None of them made it past the age of 45, all right? So I'm going to live my life the way I want.
The only problem with Barry and Tom sometimes was convincing them that I got what I needed. They would do endless amount of takes. We'd still be shooting this scene because their work ethic was so strong. They never wanted to quit. And I love that about actors. This bus sequence I actually stole from myself from a movie called Mr. Saturday Night, but I felt that this sequence was important, one to show that they were traveling by bus, and this is before planes every place, and the Yankees took trains too. This phone call I felt was important to keep Pat alive. That's how they spoke to each other. That's how we saw each other. Give me beautiful images. And give us some space in between this fight to show that they were tense with each other at this point.
I don't know, Monty. Sometimes I just feel like I'm up against the world here.
This is shot right outside that locker room at the college, and this is inside. And just you know, design moves that you know are going to, with the right kind of music, will give you the same kind of montage that you need. That's a big, wide, beautiful shot. This was taken from another moment. Try to catch behavior in the eyes, the way Maris will look at Mantle. And not stay there too long in the editing, right? I got it. You don't have to linger there, otherwise it would be overstated. This little pan over to Mickey, who's now a little feverish, as you can see, was the rap shot of the movie. Again, a vintage bus, a beautiful design by Bob Hunter, our transportation guy. He got us every kind of car and bus imaginable. Now the hate mail, the death threats. Now the movie turns into a little ugly period, and Maris is starting to crumble. The rash that Maris gets, the hair eventually will start falling out. And Mickey's starting to get sick.
I can't kick this goddamn flu.
I get a 2 days.
And this is where the season changes for both of them.
Can't sleep at night.
Mick, this is my doctor. Now, he treats Eddie Fisher, Sammy Davis, a lot of entertainers.
Now, this doctor that Mel Allen prescribes actually was my grandmother's doctor. My grandmother went to Max Jacobson.
His name's Max Jacobson.
And he shoots Mickey up with what he told him was vitamins, but actually it was a form of speed. Jacobson was the doctor who got Eddie Fisher hooked on drugs by telling them that it was vitamins. Everyone would leave that office very peppy. My grandmother would cook 9 pot roasts in a week. She was so stoned and didn't know it. You've never seen anybody inflict guilt faster than this woman when she would leave Max Jacobson's office.
You take care of yourself. You don't get sick.
What happened was he injects mantle, hits the bone in Mickey's hip, which started an infection brewing, which you'll see in a couple of minutes in the movie. The hate mail scene in bed was one of my favorite scenes in the movie. Roger and Mickey. Now, because I had the bus sequence in, this is the first time they've really spoken to each other since the fight.
Yeah, you never better.
And now I wanted a warmth. I wanted an apology between the two guys that wasn't sappy.
Jeez.
And watch how these two actors deliver.
People are stupid sometimes.
That's it. That's the apology. And they're okay with each other now.
You know, Mick,
this scene was important to me because for the first time, Mantle listens to Maris tell him something about himself.
I tell you what, that would have been just fine.
Beautiful score by Mark Shaman. Just enhances the Midwest. All I told Barry in the scene is, make me hear that house. Make me see the ball fields. Let me meet your brother.
He was tough, boy. Pushed us hard. My brother, Rudy, he was a hell of a player. He was far better than I was. We all thought that he was going to be the one. You know, I don't think I would have even played ball if he hadn't drugged me to the park all the time. He got sick, polio.
What I also loved about this scene, besides the performances, look at the difference in the two guys.
My father,
Tom looks 30. Roger looks 25.
Parents started fighting.
I had him as clean scrubbed as we could. I wanted a hurt young man. Someone in over his head. Now people want to kill him. People are hating him. He can't understand it. And the essence of the scene was nobody talked about it.
You're like a movie star.
I wanted the image of this guy in a house that was coming apart, listening to yelling and screaming.
Talk about things, and I don't know what they want to hear, and I just want to play ball.
You just tell Barry, make me hear the yelling.
There is no bad guy.
Let me see it in your eyes.
Well, I got about 1,000 more that he says you're wrong.
And open up to him. Trust Mickey.
I just don't understand why it's so important to them, you know?
Maybe I ought to forget about your mail for a while, you know? Put this shit away.
Nah, I gotta write back
the camera. I love the scene, because the take before Barry had cried, and I felt it was too early in the movie to see that happen. But there, he has this look of hurt in his eyes, knowing he's got a pile of hate mail in front of him. And yet he's gonna answer the kids. It's a great moment.
Man, look at you. You feeling all right? You don't look so good.
I went to this stupid doctor and get a shot for my flu.
Yeah.
Right in my hip. Now my hip's all infected or something. It's swollen up. I don't know what's wrong.
Well, I'll tell you what. You should have something.
Excuse me, fellas. I got a couple of my nieces over at the bar. They're nice, sweet college girls down from Boston. Would you mind taking a picture?
This little shot next, I really like this little push in on Toot Shore to the girls.
These are busy men.
Just to keep it moving. Start this fight sequence between Patton and Roger. I wanted him uncomfortable, even if we don't like him here for a minute. It's good. It's understandable. And I didn't want Pat to be whiny.
I don't know.
This shot, high, looking down on him.
I mean, they introduced me. They say take
pressurized.
What they do? I don't control the press.
Stuff's closing in on Roger.
That you're going to be home to talk to us.
Look, I'm sorry, Pat. I
see here he feels you know, bad, but what happens when people feel bad? They get defensive.
No, Pat.
So when she brings up Mickey, he defends him. Now he's mad at her.
You know, I don't have time for this. All right, I don't know how many more times we can go over it. I said I was sorry, and nothing I can do about it.
And then she feels bad for bringing that up. I think it's a real typical husband and wife edgy moment when they're not together. Now he's snapping at umpires. That's a real umpire. Guy did a great job.
Be consistent. That's bullshit. No, I'm trying to don't get tossed. Come on, boys. Don't get tossed. You're better than that. That's bullshit. Hey,
this is an actor named E.E. Bell. The throwing of the chair actually happened that season in Detroit. E.E.'s worked with me before. He was in Forget Paris as an angry fan screaming at me. I played a basketball referee, and he screamed at me, I hope you die, in case you remember that moment.
Nice hookers you got there, pal!
And he's a terrific character guy. I thought it'd be cool if they dressed him as the Babe and put him up there and just...
You want to play some ball?
Some bad heckler, you know? This is a fantastic argument scene. He said, what do I say? What did Houck say? I said, he would say this, he would act like this, and he wore his glasses when he fought. We just kept doing arguments over and over again. I just put the camera in the right place. That's what you can do with great actors like this. And actually, really terrific fan work. The extras, I would tell exactly what to feel, exactly where to look, and these fans had been to so many games in Tiger Stadium, it got easy. These are real umpires and a really good argument. Great work by Bruce McGill.
It's a madhouse out there. You all right, Raj?
Yeah.
When you're making a movie that... moments happened in the place where you're shooting him. It's kind of spooky. This scene actually happened in the visiting clubhouse at Tiger Stadium. We shot this in the home clubhouse at Tiger Stadium. But for Barry and Tom to walk in the places that Mantle and Maris actually were, and for all the team to be in the same clubhouse, was awesome for them. And it just makes the movie look so real.
Hey, Slick, what is that?
Huh? Oh, that's
nothing. So again, the two guys not only racing to beat Babe Ruth, they're both racing to stay mentally and physically fit. Maris's hair is coming out. Mantle's hip is all infected, and soon he'll be coming out of the lineup. And so any chance we could keep the two of them running neck and neck in whatever they were doing was my goal.
What the hell's happening to me, Gus?
It's Fischel! Roger, I need you out there.
I'm not talking about him.
Look, they've got a job to do.
What's that? Hurt me and my family?
You only make it worse by not talking to them.
I need you to protect me, Bob. Once! One time!
Those lines, I need to protect me, Bob, one time. I saw Maris say in an interview when he was about 48, 49 years old. And he was just conversational, but he had an anger in his eyes when he said, that ball club never protected me. And so when we were working, I showed that moment to Hank, and it became an explosion from Roger Maris at Bob Fischel, played by Robert Joy. This is a gruesome wound, but it's very accurate to what had happened to Mantle. They had opened this wound on his hip, and it had gotten all infected in Lance and gave him a terrible staph infection. But right there... when he looks up, he knows he can't play anymore.
I don't understand it, you know. Doctor says it's stress.
And this whole next scene, which I think is a Amazing performance by both guys. The first part of it is this long speech about wearing a different number when he was a rookie, but it's all a stall to tell Roger that he can't play anymore. And I think it's a stall for Mickey's sake and for Roger's sake. Mickey Mantle wanted to break this record so badly. He wanted to do so many other things in his career so badly, but in many ways he kept himself from doing that by his behavior and his physical condition. And then some stuff was just out of his control. But yet I think by telling him the story, he tries to explain himself as a human being and as a man, and now they're talking to each other more. But yet I think he's also delaying the inevitable for himself. That he's pulling out of the race.
Being in line with the other guys. And the press, man, they was all over me. Call me a hillbilly. I mean, I was, you know.
We shot many, many takes.
$7 suitcase and $8 suit. And my whole town.
Tom loves to do and find different colors. And
40 times that.
But as I look back in the editing of the scene, it's probably all one take.
That was killing me. Couldn't hit the ball.
But I think it's kind of a breathtaking moment for Tom in the movie.
I couldn't hit there neither. And finally, I called up my dad, told him out. I'm quitting. Can't do it no more. No.
This story was told to me many times by Mickey himself in similar situations.
Throws all my shit in a suitcase and says,
in a bar, late at night.
Come back to work demise with me the rest of your life.
So when I was able to put this into the script and
let me have it, boy.
When I was able to translate what I wanted to Tom, it was easy because I was hearing Mickey Mantle say these words to me.
The truth was, I was lonesome. Scared.
And every time I watch it, that's what I'm hearing.
Anyway, I started hitting again after that. And came back up and they gave me number 7. I was glad about it. I hated that.
The simplicity of this theme for Mickey is one that Mark and I particularly loved. And you heard it earlier when he hits the one-armed home run. But now, just with the simple piano and flute, it just embraces the lonely side of Mickey. And I think you tell us about Mickey Mantle and your music like this in his life, it's a beautiful combination.
You're the one carrying us down. That ain't true, you know. You do what you want with it, Raj. What I'm saying is,
you have to hear the music before you shoot the movie. You have to have some sort of music in your mind.
Can't play no more. I'm wore out. Done.
That's what I love about directing, is that it never stops. It keeps moving in different directions. You start with working on the script, and then the casting, and then once that's done, you visualize the shots, and then it becomes a reality, and now you're making a movie, and production design, and locations, and then suddenly it all comes together, and then the last touches of music and putting it all together.
You go get that fat fuck.
Here's the pitch to Maris.
Now the story shifts.
How about that?
Mickey's not the story anymore.
Well, I'd really like you to come to Baltimore if you could, honey.
He's now got 58 home runs. Mantle's got 54, and it's the story shifts to Maris and what would become the single longest shooting segment for one section of the movie, which Maris goes to Baltimore with one game left to tie or break the record in the 154-game schedule.
You know, if you could come to New York next week, you know, you could stay through the series. That'd be real nice.
Oh, I don't know with the kids.
Hey, Pat. Listen, I really need you there.
We shot the scene in one take, and Barry just hit it right on the button the first time. There's no sense to do anymore. As a man coming apart, telling his wife he needs her, he misses her, for someone of that time period, actually for anybody, but this kind of guy to tell her I need you, to me that was almost a breakdown. And to have it witnessed by members of the press, basically, was a really interesting choreographed sequence.
2 hours away, Roger. How do you feel about that?
Country braces itself for the showdown. No, it's not a showdown about the Yankees and the Orioles.
Simplicity of shots is what I had to do with the time that we had to shoot the movie in. So, you know, the newspaper, the announcer, the bus, it's a combination of videotape and only about 2 shots. And that's what you have to do when you're shooting quickly. And it's a lesson that even when you have a huge schedule, you can do things economically and still tell the story as well as you could with any kind of fancy camera work, you know. This is done to look like Baltimore, and it's done in a section of Tiger Stadium. We painted that gray, which is what Memorial Stadium in Baltimore was, and this is all done with Steadicam. Another long scene, but great work by Masser and Robert Joy as Bob Fischel. In a scene that actually happened and ends up in a scathing article by the one writer who was supporting Roger all season. Now, in between this, there was a scene that I cut from the movie. In actuality, the day of the 154th game, Roger Maris went to the hospital to visit a young boy who was dying of leukemia named Frank Slowicka. He went with his friend Whitey Herzog. That scene was shot, which I changed around to Roger answering one of those fan letters that you saw earlier. And it just felt sappy, even though it happened. How many times have we seen a baseball movie where the player goes to visit a sick kid or... And I thought I didn't need that in this movie, so I cut it. And I kept the pressure on Roger with this montage in the hotel room. This is the only piece of contemporary music in the piece. It was a Lyle Lovett song that I always loved. And with the lightning and rain and all he's thinking about is, I want this over with. And if I had that other scene in the middle of all that, it just would have broken it up. I did love the fact that this guy was screaming about where's Roger, he stood me up, and the fact Maris was with this sick kid. But I felt that this was more important, was the pressure on Roger. This, you lock the camera off, you don't move, you cut in between, your actor in different positions, and look at that. He's a caged animal, that's what we wanted, was I can't wait to get to the ballpark. Working on every moment, but also the scene was about he and Pat. This was an accident. A beautiful, tight, very difficult focus. And then Barry gave me a stunning moment with that tear. We didn't talk about it. He just did it.
You don't want to play tonight?
I don't know. Maybe it's time I took a rest, Ralph.
I put a hot light over the top of his head here to keep the pressure on him. And this was a very difficult scene for both guys to do.
I want to get it over with. Yeah, I know. You know Mickey's out. Bob's leg's gotten
worse. It's almost word for word out of an interview of Ralph Houck that told me this, that Maris said, I don't want to play tonight.
Use a day off.
You know, the only reason most of these fans are here is to see you play. You owe it to them to get out there and give it your best shot.
I owe it to them?
Great work by both guys. Simply shot.
Who I owe them, Ralph.
You got to understand, you mean something to these people. Good or bad. And if you quit now, they'll never forgive you.
Ralph, they're never going to forgive me if I do it.
Is that what you're afraid of?
I told Bruce, Ralph Houck was a major. He was at the Battle of the Bulge. Many times he must have seen a soldier who didn't want to go into battle, didn't want to fight. And he had to understand their personality and coax them.
Sentimental type guy, you know, but most of us bang around the game for a while.
Or send him home.
Cobb, Gary.
The only direction I had to give a terrific actor like Bruce was make a speech that puts this into perspective.
And I know that is not what you want. But right now, whether you like it or not, you're bigger than the game. This is your one shot to go out there and show them what you're made of. And that you owe to yourself. I tell you what, why don't you play the first inning, and if you want to come out, you give me a look, and I'll take you out. All right, then. Sounds fair.
Well, Memorial Stadium in Baltimore was built in the L.A. Coliseum. This is a long sequence. This is almost 14 minutes of the movie, with cuts to Frick and Mrs. Ruth and Pat Maris eventually at the station in Kansas City. The masks were my idea to taunt him. It gave me great production design. This field is all created. The last time there was an infield at the Coliseum was when the Dodgers played there in 1959. The press box was built on the stage. The infield crew at Dodger Stadium actually built this field. And again, it's the first time there was baseball there since the Dodgers played there in 1959. We built the dugouts, we built everything. The old scoreboard in Memorial Stadium. And that windy night that Maris came so close. That's actual footage of that night mixed in on the TV. A little bit of change of speed sometimes with a, you know, high speed, which gave us a little bit of slow motion. The important thing was to keep it accurate, keep it moving, and keep the pressure on. This is actually Roger Maris walking to the plate now. That's Maris. That's Barry. That's Lightning by Centropolis. I got a low angle looking up. They painted out the rest of the stadium and put the Lightning in. Real calluses. Real pitch. Real swing. Fake ball. This is the longest home run, time-wise, in the history of baseball. Now, this is the real Maris running the bases here. That's Roger, our Roger. Now, that's the real Maris footage that Pat saw as she came in to the TV station.
Got two more at-bats, maybe three.
What, all of a sudden you're back on his side?
He's only one shy now, folks. My number 59. Don't go anywhere.
Now, during sequences like this, I would have the actual tape of the 59th home run or any moment that we were doing to refer to show Barry and Tom the little intricacies of what the real Maris and Mantle did, and so it was accurate. So, also, with who was sitting on the bench and where they were, so it could be as right as possible. So everything would be examined either by a still photograph or a piece of videotape, and then we would match it or interpret it as best we could. Crazy side on delivery. It's very tough to read.
Oh, what a swing by Maris. Boy, I tell you, every pitch could be the one.
A lot of music in the sequence that Mark carefully worked on with me to keep it intense, keep the pressure on, and not keep it... or let it be corny.
Go, number 60. Go, go. That ball is going. It is going. It is. Go.
It's like Ruth's ghost was pushing it back.
No. I thought he had it.
Yeah. The way Hall's pitching tonight, he'll never get another at bat. It's over.
Oh, what a shame. And to go out that way, boy, so close. The wind just held it up. But any other night, that's out of here. So, unless the Yanks get a rally here, Roger doesn't have a chance to get the 60th in 154 games, Mel.
You know, in interpreting this, there was a moment when Mantle obviously not playing now. Leads the guys, let's get a rally going. Let's give Roger one more chance to get up. And that's indeed what happened. The Yankees rallied, and this is the way I interpreted it with Hank, was that Mantle was the ringleader. And I played it off in a two-shot with Hauk, because early in the movie he says, I need you to be the leader, and Mantle becomes that.
Here we go, folks. Top of the ninth, Yanks up 4-2. Two outs and on the verge of clinching the pennant, but nobody's thinking about that. All eyes are on Roger Maris.
Oh, you said it, Mel. What a story. The Yanks get a rally to get Roger another at bat. And I tell you, something's going to happen here. I can just feel it.
I'm going to make a change.
Time? Time is up!
What's this? Time out on the field?
Hoyt Wilhelm, who was about to be brought into the game, threw the greatest knuckleball of the day, a knuckleball which you'll see in a second. The man who played him is Tom Candiotti, who was a great knuckleball pitcher with the Dodgers and Cleveland Indians and other teams, and I wanted the authentic knuckleball. They used a big glove in those days. It's now illegal to catch this special pitch. And this was a chance to show the audience what Maris would be facing. So we had the great people at Centropolis study knuckleballs. And then I went into the design with them and told them how I wanted it to be. Tom Candiotti would actually throw a real pitch, and they actually paint it out and add their own. This is all a made-up ball. But it gives you the bird's eye view, the batter's view, of what Maris would be facing, the most difficult pitch in baseball to hit.
Roger Maris with one final shot at tying the Babe, and he's facing the man with the single toughest pitch in baseball. Wilhelm takes the sign, but we all know what's coming. The Roger Maris have one last home run in him. Cole found it back. Roger had a good cut on that ball, but it's dancing all over the place.
And here comes the most famous knuckleball in history of knuckleballs. And it comes up as he gets tagged out is the real Maris, right there. That's really Roger. Back to our guy finishing the run that you saw the real Maris take. Then in the background, I put an announcement that there were, I believe, 21,000 fans.
All right, check it off. Three outs for clinch.
Can you imagine how many fans there would be? Mark McGuire was going to break the record, and I've often thought, how many fans would there be had it been Mickey Mantle?
But he'll fall one shy of the record. How about that?
I'm sorry, Mrs. Maris.
I shouldn't have moved my chair. Jinxed him.
That line, I jinxed him, was taken from an actual diary of Pat Maris that she had forgotten about, and when she came and saw the movie for the first time, she said, oh my God, where did you get that from? And it was a diary that had been published in Look magazine in the off-season. And it was just a great little thing to find and put in. The superstitious baseball wife, as most baseball players are themselves, as their wives become that too. These quotes coming up are all quotes from the 1961 season.
Perhaps it may sound corny, but my biggest sports thrill in 1961...
And any member of the press who said, you know, when they saw the movie, oh, you're a little hard on the press, you know? These are actual quotes. Listen to them.
If the record is to be broken, it should be done by someone of greater baseball stature, greater color and public appeal.
Maris is no more than a good big league ball player. He's colorless. He's never hit 300 and is often surly. There just isn't anything deeply heroic about the man.
Is there something to be said about fate on this?
And this was something that we created. Was I being too hard on them? I don't think so.
The ball fluttered just past the sweet spot.
Barry has haunting eyes. Maris had sad eyes. Look in his eyes here in this whole sequence we just played in this one. I kept it in slow motion. And then let him become the team guy again. He knows he didn't do it. Look at those eyes. This is shot in a clubhouse in Detroit. Made it look exactly like the Baltimore clubhouse, and I think a pretty perfect design. This is a moment that mirrors the restaurant scene. This time it's Mantle watching Maris. Maris is now the story, not Mickey. I threw him into black and white here because I just felt that the color was out of his season. And then that brings us this beautiful shot of Central Park, which we shot in October in the Plaza Hotel. Just kept it with a great sense of reality, because you're cutting inside to another suite that we decorated at the Ambassador Hotel out in Los Angeles. And of course, Roger's keeping his hat on to hide the bald spots on his head from his wife. And I wanted awkwardness between them. This wasn't a movie about, honey, you're home and sweeping up and kissing. There's an awkwardness between married people and especially Midwestern people. A quiet. They're not that familiar with each other in a way. They haven't seen each other in weeks. And I wanted to show that in his reticence and showing of what he's been through. But yet they love each other.
See the view? Nice. It's Central Park out there.
Yeah, I know. It's beautiful.
As close as they were, boyfriend, girlfriend, since they were 17 and 18 years old, respectively, he's holding on to something, which I kept him from saying until the end of the scene. And I thought it was really interesting to do it this way. Scenes have to be patient with people who don't like to talk a lot. And he's looking at these pictures. From the moment he picked up Pat at the airport, he's been wanting to say what was on his mind. Even now, he doesn't look at it till it's time to tell her.
Didn't do it, Pat.
I didn't do it. Just couldn't do it. And that's opening the door for her to be intimate with him.
Listen up. Serv's recovering from his surgery. He's done for the year. And we had to put Mickey in the hospital today, too.
Our touring Yankees, the guys who were with us, we took to Detroit, did a fantastic job. And they were all ball players. But as the shoot went on, they started to realize they were also actors. These are guys who played minor league ball, college ball, and they were our Yankees. And I'm totally indebted to them for... not only the ball playing, but the great performances that they give just by their presence. The reality in the dugout. They've been there. They know how to spit, they know how to chew, they know how to put their legs up, they know how to sit, they know how to be ball players, and that was important for me. It's a subtle thing, but it ends up being very accurate.
Nice of you to be here.
This home run, the 60th home run, was only witnessed by 21,000 fans, I believe, or 19,000 fans, something very low. This is a totally created shot coming up. Brilliant work by Centropolis. I said, have a ball pass by the moon. The only thing that really existed was the crowd and the upper deck. The rest was totally created by Centropolis. It's one of my favorite home runs in the movie.
Roger Maris and, of course, the late Babe Ruth.
And, Bill, he's got... Those shots just meant so much to me, the reality of that old ballpark. I love Yankee Stadium, but it was renovated in 74 and 5, and it's never quite looked the same, even though it's still a fantastic place. That old place was amazing to me. As you can see it there, I mean, this is actual footage. The chance for you fans to sit in Yankee Stadium as it was meant a great deal to me. I'm so proud of the work that Centropolis did in the movie and in letting that happen.
But I don't know where my swing's gone in the last three games. I just can't seem to hit the ball.
Maybe you're just trying too hard.
Yeah, maybe. You know, if I hit one tomorrow, the ball's going to be worth $5,000.
$5,000 for a ball.
Can you believe that?
Oh, my God, it'll be a madhouse.
This moment in the movie is very powerful. It's the only time he actually says he wants to do it.
I want to do it. You know, it may not count to everybody else, but I'll know.
And I wanted him to say, it may not count to everybody else, but I want to do it. I'll know, and you'll be there. I think it's a very romantic scene. Just the way they look at each other. And again, beautiful lighting and simple grace of Haskell Wexler.
Hello, everybody. This is Mel Allen. Well, you couldn't have asked for a more dramatic finish to an incredible season. Last game, last chance for Roger Maris.
I mean, if you look at all the scenes, you know, the cameras and that view of Yankee Stadium, no one has seen since that season. When you look at it, there's the Bronx, the flag is waving. That's all stuff that Centropolis did. This is Tiger Stadium. When you paint it that light green, it's almost a haunting... haunting look at what Yankee Stadium was back then. And I put Whitey there being interviewed, and it gives you great scope. That's the real Maris. Unfortunately, that's a night game. There wasn't any footage of Roger settling into the batter's box, so that's a little bit of a cheat. This shot, every time I see it, takes my breath away. This is Paul Gallo, who was... I gave him this part because he pitched to Barry all summer. He was his batting practice pitcher and coach. And now he's an actor. He's Tracy Stallion. Now, this is the actual call of Phil Rizzuto. It's just in different pieces. For those who know the call, hit deep to right, way back there. Holy cow, he did it. It's there. It's just in different pieces. That's the real Maris. That's Barry, who to me is the real Maris. The young man who plays Sal Durante in The Fight of the Ball, and Haskell and I looked at photographs, there was always those silhouettes in the foreground of shots. It gives you, you know, with only a few people, you can make it look like it's a sold-out crowd. This is an exact duplicate of the home run trot of Roger Maris and the path he took. The man who just patted him on the back was Maris's friend, Andy Strasburg. One fan came out of the stands. And Andy and Roger have been best of pals, and I thought it was appropriate that he be the guy to pat Roger on the back and run into the seats. To recreate the moment, this was a still photograph. Everybody's in the right position. Scourin, Ford, Houck, Cleet Boyer, they're the ones who forced him out. Taking a huge bow to a pretty empty stadium, that shot tells me everything I need to know about the summer of Roger Maris. And I love these shots of Jenny as Pat and the look she has in her face. And this moment of Jenny is just, I think, an exquisite moment from an actress. This is all handheld stuff with a lot of pans and whips and just kept it active and moving. It was a really fun scene to do and just made it feel as accurate as possible and as... I wanted a different mood in this scene, an excitement, an intimacy, almost Roger's point of view of the people who had chased him all year.
How about the asterisk, Roger? You think that's all right?
Well, I don't know, Sam. This is not my decision.
Roger,
what do you think about the crowd today? They give you a lot of support out there.
Yeah, that was really nice. Yeah.
Roger, do you think you earned their respect holding up under all this pressure?
Oh, gosh. I don't know, Milt. I really don't think that's something you earn on a ball field.
Raj, what about next year? You think you can do it again?
There's a beautiful wide shot there. In this moment now, this music kicks back up and we go to high speed. This was an improvisation on the day at the moment, and it sort of became a parade of the great Yankee numbers. Of course, Maris's 9 and Hauk. You'll see as many numbers as you could pass by. Yogi, Gus Moth, Pete Sheehy, and then 32, the late Elston Howard. And then Bill Scarron, number 14. Number 16 of Whitey Ford. These are legendary numbers of that team. And then I brought the Bat Boy in to bring the bat, and it all started to make sense to me during the shoot that this bat was the relay baton of the movie, starting in the hospital with Pat, given to Roger, and then you see at the end of the picture to Mark McGuire. And then to relieve all of this, I don't know, beautiful tension, finally a good, clean smile from Roger. A great moment from Tom Jane.
Fuck.
And a perfect Mickey moment.
How are you, pal?
Hey. Congratulations.
Thanks.
That was great.
Thanks, man.
Boy,
some nice joint they got you in here.
Oh, thanks.
Where's Bob?
Oh, he's in his room clipping his toenail.
The levels of intimacy in this moment,
well,
these two
crazy
guys, was great to watch them achieve.
Yeah, I saw the guys as pushing you out of the dugout.
Yeah, they wouldn't let me back in, so, and, you know.
I saw it.
I love the awkwardnesses in it. I love the spaces. I love the humor. And again, Maris is thinking about what he wants to say to Mickey. And he can't quite get there yet. See, even there, he's about to start, but Mickey has a new thought.
Wish I was there.
Yeah, we all did.
He's thinking about what he wants to say still.
Without you, Mick.
And that's not what he wants to say.
Oh, you mean Pat?
See, he has a nervousness about him.
I just figured I'd see how you're doing.
Mantle makes jokes. They're stalling.
For the series.
It's guys.
I hope so. I hate it here.
And then Mantle gives him a space. He makes a joke. And then
give you a sleeping pill.
Maris takes the moment where he can say what he wants to say.
You guys on the tube.
Which is this.
You would have done it too. You know that.
Bullshit. It was you, Raj.
And Mickey's able to tell him it was you. It wasn't meant to be me.
Nobody can ever take that away from you, neither.
And then the whole movie, from this rebel rouser, drinker, carouser, he puts his hand out and he says something that is more important than Roger, than any compliment Mantle says to him.
You're a good man, Roger.
You're a good man, Roger. And then it's ball players talking about a pitch.
Oh, yeah. I guess it wasn't fast enough.
You got good wood on that.
Oh, man.
It felt good, Mick. I do know the feeling. Greatest season of my life. Wouldn't want to do it again.
And then we're back to the concept of the whole movie taking place during Mark McGwire's 60-second home run. And we're back in the present of Pat Maris. Remember what I said earlier about what this movie meant to me was the loss of a husband and father. After the ball playing is over and this new record, I wanted the juxtaposition, you know, the way Maris ran around the bases, what Serve says he ran around like it was his first. And then look at this excitement, fireworks, the king is dead, long live the king. But yet, it's about a husband and father. And McGwire knew that. Mark McGwire knew that. In the goodness of his heart, he ran to the Maris kids.
Well, mixed emotions, I'm sure, for the Maris kids. Sorry to see the record fall. But on the other hand, grateful for the fame this season has brought their father.
Beautiful work by Pat Crowley.
As I went over to the box and talked to
I showed her these tapes.
The Rogers kids.
So she had this to watch.
I told them today when I met with the Hall of Fame, they pulled out Rogers' bat that...
Now he's got the bat, and the relay race is complete.
And I touched it.
And to see a big guy like this have a crack in his voice, and by saying he'd be proud to have his bat rest with his, meant everything to Pat and would have meant everything to Roger. This shot here was intended to be the 60th home run, but when I saw it, I said, no, this has got to be our coda. And who better to explain the asterisk than the voice of the Yankees, Bob Shepard?
Roger Maris died 6 years earlier, never knowing...
And then I painted out the umpire and catcher, leaving the essence of Roger, a bat and home plate. I believe in cameos at the end of a movie with credits so you know who they were, especially with new actors like Barry and Tom. Because you wouldn't know who people are, and they work so hard. So I've done this in every movie I've done, and I'll continue to do it. I think it's great. I've seen the movie, and everyone gets their applause like they're in a play. And they've earned this right. They've earned that tribute, and I love doing it. Hope you've enjoyed listening to my yapping. I had the best time ever making this movie, and it's fun to watch it again and tell you about it. See you at the ballpark. Oh, wait, there's one more thing. Coming up is a dedication that meant everything to me, and it needs an explanation. You're going to see a little kid and a father in the stands the same way I was when I went to my first game in 1956, and I saw Mickey Mantle hit a home run in my first game. This is Mickey Mantle's son, Danny, and Mickey's grandson, Will Mantle, who basically played me and my dad. To watch the two Mantles watching our Mantle, and a dedication to my dad, well, kind of speaks for itself.
And that's a home run.
There's a lot of credits, folks. There's a lot of credits here. A lot of credits. Anyone who takes sole credit for a movie is out of their minds. You know, the thing about, if you look at credits, don't tune them out. Look at, if you want to be a director or want to be a producer, look at all the people who help you make your movie. I'm just pouring a little water here, so. Carl Griffin, man, Carl is an Englishman who thought this movie was about cricket in the beginning, who, you know, manipulates budget and schedule, and God, did a phenomenal job. These are all our guys to watch Yogi Berra serve. All of the real Yankees watch this movie together with us at the premieres was awesome. These are all people who work on a movie. So when you look at them, you just don't look at them and go, oh boy, look at a lot of credits. You look at what it takes to make a movie. And we, again, did this in 36 days. If we had 72 days, like we should have had, my God, then you'd be going, look at these credits. Something about Reggie Smith and R.J., Reggie's son, and Paul Gallo, they're the ones who really taught the guys how to play ball. They did a phenomenal job. If you watch the making of, which comes along with us, with the movie, you'll get a real understanding of Reggie had 8 weeks to turn these guys into Mantle and Maris. And also with credits, you know, you get to hear uncut, without picture and dialogue, the beautiful music of Mark Shaman. A very warm, proud feeling that something that I was involved with kept people employed for months. It's a great feeling. A lot of special thanks. The Yankees, George Steinbrenner, Rick Cerrone, who was phenomenal with us, Mr. Bud Selig, the Commissioner of Baseball, especially, and everyone at Major League Baseball for the footage. Big thank you to Mark McGuire for being a great gentleman. Thanks, everybody. As Bob Shepard would say, good afternoon and arrive home safely.